Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
After they died, it felt like every time I closed my eyes, I'd see it. The crash, their final moments.
I don't know what to say except I'm sorry.
It got so bad I couldn't even look at pictures of them. Seeing their faces. And then Hammer died and it all came back. But I kept covering it with work and smiles and more work. The truth is I've never been able to face death. Everyone has some way of dealing with it and moving on, but I don't know how. How could I be a Starfleet officer if I can't handle death?
Okay. Podcast.
Stick my silly sack in your face.
Okay.
Okay, all right. We're going to start the podcast now.
Shit.
Yes. You're all ready?
Yes.
You ready, Jesse?
Yeah, I'm ready.
You ready, Dan?
I'm ready.
Yes, I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm certain.
Certain.
I'm ready.
I'm certainly ready.
My name's Patrick. It feels awkward saying our names because we don't normally do that. We don't really do that. But, you know, we follow most of the rules in the podcasting book, you know, on the podcasting checklist.
Most of them. We bend them a bit.
We bend some of them. You know, you got to put some flavors in there. But
I like to chew a bit.
But we don't chew? Chew what?
Chew on snacks.
Oh, I mean. I thought you were going to develop like a chewing tobacco habit.
Oh,
no.
That's gross.
Good.
Let's not do that.
Chaw.
So you're Patrick.
Chaw. Anyway.
You're Jesse. Names?
I sometimes am. Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
My name is Neota.
All right. He's very good. All right. That's my name. Now I get where you're going. Okay. We got our
name
names.
My name is not Neota.
We got our names.
Neota.
Podcasting checklist is names of hosts. Nobody cares.
Name of the podcast.
For some reason, it's on the checklist. What people do care
196.
About. Yes, they do care to, even though people have clicked on this and presumably have read the title of the podcast and the episode we're covering, people do nevertheless like us to state clearly that they are indeed listening to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. They are listening to the 196th episode of the podcast.
Is it really that much?
It's
yes, smeared. It's the 196th episode.
Oh, it's getting close to 200.
It's getting very close to 200.
Episode of the season.
And we will be.
Or did I get that wrong?
Yes, no, it is. It is the 90th.
Okay,
it is the sixth, sixth episode of the season.
I'm making an ass of myself.
Suffering Succotash. It's the sixth episode of the season.
Succotash is good.
Okay.
Isn't it just like corn, carrots and lima beans or something?
Well, you could add other bits too and make it jazzy.
Well, okay. We will be discussing.
Red pepper.
We will be discussing Strange New World, Season 2, Episode 6, Lost in Translation.
Mm-hmm.
Not the 2003 movie.
No.
Starring Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, it was kind of a bummer, wasn't it?
It was a good movie. But I mean, you could argue it was a bummer. You could argue it had, certain
it's like one of those movies where
takes place in Tokyo.
Where you're watching,
I believe it was Tokyo.
You're watching it, and you're like, I don't really know what this movie's about, but that set it apart.
But it's not that we're not discussing that movie.
No,
whatever
Star
we
Trek.
Whatever we end up discussing, we are not discussing the 2003 movie version of Lost in Translation.
That's the It's Got Bill Murray podcast.
We will.
That's not what this is.
Be discussing Lost in Translation season 6 of episode. No, episode 6 of season 2 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. That's what we will be discussing.
Yeah.
In a minute, we'll be discussing that.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit.
Though. No, not a lot.
A little bit.
Just a little bit, because there are a few things to discuss. Thing number one, as
it sounds serious. It's thing. Like, it's no, like it's not we're, serious. We're in trouble or something.
No, I'm just trying. I'm just trying to make it clear. I want to make it clear to our friends, the mm-hmm. audience, that they're not going to have to deal with too much of this nonsense before mm-hmm. we get into the actual discussion of the episode.
Not too much. A little bit.
Not too much. Just right. a little bit. And they might be interested in this nonsense because the nonsense we're getting into prior to the discussion nonsense is.
Part. You said it like part.
Prior to.
Zombie. Zombie.
Zombie.
I did my part.
Oh, my part. Oh, and you, oh, you say it's an Irish thing.
Almost.
Like you yeah. like the cranberries.
I'm not saying I did it well, but that's what it sounded. That's
you
what
thought
it reminded
that
me
I
of.
Sound like I, never mind.
It okay. made me, you made me think of the cranberries.
The cranberries. Okay. All right. So let's get back to brass tacks here. It's... Dan,
we're not going to do too much of this shit.
We're not going to do too much. Dan, you referenced earlier, you commented on the fact that we are nearing our 200th episode.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you do that?
200.
Is that okay? 200th episode. 200. That's in German, since word. You did Spanish. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we have any other languages amongst the crew. Jesse, do you know any? Do you know any languages?
Unfortunately.
Los cientros.
The 200th episode of It's Got Star Trek is coming up, and we are going to have a special little fun time extravaganza on that show where we will, I don't know, we'll do something fun, but among the fun things we're...
Dan, what's 200 in Klingon?
Mock, talk,
mock. He's making that up, and people in our audience will know.
Moon, moon!
Tulim, poo, tulampu! 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 But on that 200th episode, no doubt we will be able to do fun things like have Dan talk like Picard and Rascals.
What?
And I can talk like the 60s gross producer talking about boobs and things like that.
Boobs.
We'll have fun doing stuff like that.
Boobs
but,
and wimes.
But,
so and we talk about boobs and wimes.
You're my number one dad. What we want to do, see, Dan and I flipped it up a little bit.
We
there.
Did it.
Yeah, because you're not getting the real stuff until episode 200.
Yeah.
But the reason we're making a point here is coming up, leading up to that special episode, we are soliciting from our audience comments, questions,
and your blood.
Oh yeah,
you needn't send in your blood.
You can record stuff and send it.
But yes, okay. First off,
I'm jumping in.
You may send an email if you would like to send us an email. We will read that email online. On the air, we'll read that email. If you like, if your email's your thing, we're cool with that. Send us an email at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. However, it would be awesome if you would join the very many co-members of your audience who have already sent in an audio message. And we would love to have you record some audio messages, again, with questions, whatever, questions, comments, whatever you have for us. Just want to celebrate 200 episodes of It's Got Star Trek. You want to critique us, whatever you want to do. Send in an audio recording.
You can just say the word 200. And
if you just want to make a recording where you just sort of say the word 200 over and over and over again, that would be fine by
me. Are you serious?
Well, that was my thing, so I guess people can take that. No, I don't have anything to do.
We're just trying to get some content. We would like your help to help us get some content.
We're out of ideas.
It's been almost 200 episodes. But you may do this very easily, if you are so inclined, by going to www.itsgotstartrek.com/record.
That's
itsgotstartrek.com/record. And you can easily record part. Using your computer microphone, your phone microphone, your iPad or tablet, any of those microphones, whatever.
There's lots of microphones.
You can get it. And the only issue there is it's limited to 90 seconds. If you need to record more than 90 seconds,
you're a maniac.
You're welcome to, but you'll have to record it separately. Send us an MP3 or whatever to the feedback@itscaststartrek.com address. Anyway, we're looking forward to that.
Captain.
It's going to be super fun. And get those recordings sent in soonish. That would be great. Because we're going to record that episode a little ahead of time. So,
time is of the essence.
Sort of. You know, you got a little time, but send them in.
It's only a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's a few weeks away.
A few weeks.
Yeah. Few weeks away. Okay, that's done. Now, we have one small bit of business related to last week's episode. Listener mail. We have
Is this bad?
No, not bad at all.
Okay.
I think he's going to read the one that I actually was going to read, too.
I was getting worried.
Were you going to read this one? Did you get this
I don't know, but you go ahead.
Well, this is the one from Joseph J. Shorter the
Fourth. Yeah, that's the one I was going to read, but you should read it.
Well, you can read it if you want.
No, 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 you read it.
Okay. Dan literally just took his phone and like threw it aside. He's like, fuck, I'm not reading this.
No. All right. I was just bringing it up to confirm that we both wanted to remark
on this email. Okay. Both. So, yes, we got this great email from Joe Shorter who said, "Gentlemen, to me it was clear," and this is again, for context, this is in reference to last week's episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Charades, in which Spock temporarily becomes human and has to go through a Vulcan engagement ceremony with hilarious and touching results. Mm-hmm. Joe Shorter says, "Gentlemen, to me it was clear that the Vulcan ceremony was based on another vital human tradition, Festivus. The carrying of the teapot is clearly a feat of strength, while the aggressive, passive-aggressive attacks were the airing of grievances."
That's pretty dead on.
"These are things from a show you may or may not have watched, Seinfeld."
Oh, I may.
Winky face. Yeah. We are very familiar with Seinfeld, and indeed very familiar with Festivus, and I think Joe is...
I could teach a class on that.
Yeah, Jesse could indeed do that. I think Joe is 100% correct. It really does seem like the feats of strength part, and then the airing of grievances.
Yeah.
I don't remember the other components. Wasn't there like a Festivus poll or something?
Yeah, there was some kind of poll.
And I forget if there were other ceremonial stuff, but... But yeah, no, thanks, Joe, for sending that in. I think that's good. Joe goes on to say that he says, "Love the podcast. You guys are usually my first listen every week.
Cool.
I appreciate hearing fellow Gen Xers nerd out in many ways that have me nodding along. And yes, Dan, I caught your reference to Last Caress last week. That gave me a good chuckle."
Yeah, by the Misfits. Yeah. Well, Jesse, I don't know if you remember that.
I remember that because I was listening to it recently.
Didn't you?
I was listening to the podcast.
Didn't you comment that you're like, that's a line that very few people will reference? I think you even stated that was a reference few people would get.
Yeah. You know, somebody it's not like it's it. That. I mean, look, I'm just, I don't know. I can't, I mean, I, to some.
Well, Joe got it.
Joe got it for sure. I mean, I'm
right
saying,
on, Joe.
It's really difficult for me not to say Joe Mama.
Good on you, Joe.
I mean, I just, you know, I did it anyway in a meta sense.
Your mother.
Yes. Okay. Well, you know, thank you, Joe. Thank you for the kind comments. We appreciate that. Jesse's probably firmly a Gen Xer. Dan and I might be Zennials. Is that what they call us now?
I thought I was a Zennial.
You might be a Zennial. I don't know. I don't know. I don't remember what the years are, but we're in there. My sisters are definitely Gen Xers. They're older than me, but we're on that weird cusp.
Mm-hmm. That somewhere cusp. In the middle there.
I always thought of myself as Gen X, but I really don't know. Because, yeah, same thing. Everyone's like, we don't know what we are.
The issue with humanity, one of the issues with humanity.
In 50 years, somebody will come up with a better way of
it. Is we have an obsession with categorization.
Yeah.
And the categories are, even if well-intentioned and well thought out, inevitably somewhat arbitrary.
Yeah.
So to that end, we cannot definitively claim adherence to like a particular rubric,
the line,
or generational categorization.
But the line between human,
the line must be drawn here, but no further.
The line between human and Vulcan, you could say, is a bit arbitrary too, although it's much more defined.
Yeah.
But ultimately, everything is just arbitrary.
Well, and we discussed, and it turns out a number of other podcasts, I think they mentioned on Sci-Fi Redmond and a couple
other
podcasts.
It's like the difference between a dolphin and a worm is still arbitrary.
Last week, there was a lot of discussion about how there's the whole plot line revolved around Spock, who is ostensibly a multiracial person, being turned into one race. And there is it wasn't just us who touched on the potential problems with that, the problematic nature with that. But regardless, okay.
Yeah, but so, you know, thank you, Joe.
And that was
good, awesome. Good catch on that reference. I really thought no one would get that.
Yeah.
I
was good. All right.
Totally mistaken.
So now that we have concluded the
it's new business.
Email, yes, we've concluded old business. We can move on to new business.
The new business.
Kirk again.
Yeah.
Kirk's back.
That's actually the first thing I thought when I saw it. I was like, uh-oh, Patrick.
this is the real Kirk.
Haven't you made the same... Didn't you have some of the same fear? Is it just me?
No, it's not just you. Okay. I didn't mean to be exclusionary.
Like, oh, Patrick.
No, I actually agreed with your assessment that, yeah, we don't need to, like, linger on Kirk too long. And But you were the one who brought up, and honestly, I hadn't.
We've only seen like alternate Kirk so far. This is the first real Kirk.
I hadn't. Oh yeah.
Well, first real Kirk in person.
In person, yeah.
But I hadn't actually.
Laan's pad.
I hadn't. I hadn't actually
pad Thai.
I hadn't.
They're gonna have some pad Thai.
I hadn't,
puns in the future.
I hadn't actually thought about it until you brought it up last week, and I was like, you know what? He's right. Because yeah, we only
it was a few weeks ago.
But
it was tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.
Okay, a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
in whatever time zone,
three
time
episodes
world
ago.
we were on. The thing about this episode with Kirk is it reminded me of the fact that Kirk is important in the sense that it's like Spock and Uhura and Kirk all meeting up and stuff. Now, is that just fan service or do you think it's really relevant?
And then
I do agree that we don't need to hear this story, but it's hard to sort of ignore that fact. And this episode kind of like bookended it with a nice reasoning, at least for why Kirk was there.
And I want to clarify a point, because even during tomorrow, my critique was not so much about Kirk per se, but in how they're potentially going to use Kirk. And what I said at the time was that.
You will always be mine.
What I said at the time was that I was worried about them overusing Kirk. However, in Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, they used him well. In Quality of Mercy, they used him well. And I said, they could use him 100 more times. As long as they keep using him well, I'm not going to get so annoyed, but I'm a little nervous because it's like, this is supposed to be strange new worlds as opposed to like regular old characters.
Right. And I'm trying to decide if like, I haven't seen Pike enough but I'm trying to think of like, how often did we see Picard? We associate with seeing Picard all the time, but there are a lot of episodes where Picard wasn't that present, but Pike, I feel like we just haven't quite seen enough.
There's real life stuff too, because Anson Mount and his wife gave birth to their, I believe, first child.
Congratulations.
Around the time of this production. So,
hey, Sansan, congratulations, man.
Sansan?
That's what we call each other. Well, that's what I call him.
That's what you call
him. He calls me Don Don.
But your name is Dan.
Yeah,
but he has a childish pronunciation of your name.
No, because
it's a term of endearment.
Because I call him Sansan, he calls me Don Don.
And these are terms of endearment.
Instead of Sansan.
We're buds. You don't understand. Because you're not.
Because I'm not buds with anybody?
Because
I have no buds?
Me and Sansan have a thing going on. Okay. That's all I'm
You've saying. You've got a thing going on.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you call him like Mountie?
A very platonic thing.
Mountain.
Mountie? There was a pro wrestler called the Mountie.
Okay, anyway.
Canadian.
Kirk.
Okay,
we're getting far away from the point here. I think there's 2 points.
We're going on the alternate timeline.
I am and continue. My critique stands, which is it's a suspended critique. It is not yet applied because...
Will it be retroactively applied?
No, not necessarily, because...
Like the study of gambling wins and losses is kind of like, see, I told you it's going to be like that. But like,
these episodes where they've used Kirk, they have used him well. I think the critique still stands that you are taking some attention away from the characters on this show and leaning a little bit heavily on some older characters. I think it's a legitimate criticism. This episode, though, I think it finally clicked in my head what they were doing. Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, I don't know, I might have mentioned this, but I'm convinced of it, what they're doing here, which is one by one, they are giving all these characters
one by one
experiences with one or another version of James T. Kirk, because at a certain point, all of these characters are going to come together and be in a position to recommend Kirk be Pike's successor. Mm-hmm. Pike is going to be into it. Uhura is going to be into it and want to serve with him. Laan is going to be into it.
Spock,
of course, we have the beginning of their, you know, they meet for the first time here. And we'll,
Chief O'Brien?
What about him?
Chief O'Brien, I do not think is relevant.
I don't think he's alive
at least directly relevant to this, this story. But that's what I think they're doing. They're setting up this idea where they're creating a retroactive justification for Kirk.
Retroactive being
the youngest captain in the history of Starfleet or whatever.
Retroactive when justification.
Yes.
Gonna get you in outer space.
All right, this is a new segment. A new segment called Retroactive Justification.
Gonna get you in outer space.
Retroactive justification.
So I believe that's what they're doing. Now, I dig that. I dug that they were adding to his character here. I agree with you, Dan. It was, they used him for a purpose. And for me, it worked. It continued to work. That being said, just like with Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, I get a little nervous about how many times more are we going to see, or is he going to have an adventure with number one? Is he going to have, you know, is he going to have an adventure with all these different people?
Right.
So they keep having an excuse to bring him back. I don't know.
I wonder if part of it is just like what they think will get them better ratings in season two. It's like everyone loves Kirk, or I wonder if there's any of that going into it. And I'm not saying that anyone in particular is pushing for that or anybody. I'm just saying sometimes there are sort of like higher up reasons why people do things, but there was enough popularity surrounding like the first seasons of Strange New Worlds.
This is why this point is important. My understanding is season two was largely written and even filmed before they got any input from season one. So in other words, they had a two-season order. They got started on season two pretty quickly. Mm. I think they were happy with what they had, but they had not yet started airing season one episodes, at least at the beginning of season two. So they were producing it continuing to produce the show in somewhat of a vacuum.
That is an interesting, important point.
The producers have mentioned, for example, that they didn't realize how popular certain characters would end up being, like Hemmer, for example.
Yeah.
And Ortegas, I think, has probably turned out to be a more popular character than the producers realized because she's very underused. I mean,
she's pretty awesome.
We got to see a little bit of Ortegas this season in that one particular episode with the eating your brains with the lotus leaves.
That was what it was called.
Eating your brains with lotus
Among
leaves.
Among the lotus eaters?
Yes, eating your brains with lotus leaves. But that wasn't like an Ortegas episode in the same way that this was an Uhura episode.
Right.
Or Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow was a La'an episode.
Do you think we're going to get to see like
La'an Noonien Singh?
Gary Mitchell?
Gary Mitchell?
Gary Mitchell.
Wow, that's an old cut.
Yeah.
Gary Mitchell.
why am I forgetting the old line? Oh, yeah.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Oh, we need to get that recording.
Oh, yeah. That one's important. That's right.
That's one of those old waves I have on my computer somewhere. I got to dig out that old wave from back in the day.
So, speaking of Hemmer, this episode did exactly what it did to Uhura, which it just made me sad Hemmer was gone.
Yeah.
I was really bummed. Although they displayed Hemmer as a much more jovial, joking kind of like fun, jokey, fun dude. And before
he didn't usually come off as that.
Yeah, before he always came off as kind of curmudgeonly. Now that's or whatever, curmudgeonly might be the wrong word. But you know what I'm saying? Like
he's
grumpy, cranky, kind of like. So now I'm not saying that they're wrong to do that. We didn't get to learn much about Hemmer, but it was just interesting that we've never seen that side of Hemmer before, being all like, you almost blew up the ship. Just kidding.
Right.
You know, him doing that thing as she was watching YouTube videos on how to do stuff starring Hemmer. He probably had his own.
She made her own YouTube.
Her star tube. star tube. You star.
Uhura tube.
Uhura tube. She's talking about Uhura tube.
That sounds a little. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
That's like some Star Trek V Uhura. Yeah. where she's doing the fan dance, you know, like the leaf.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Star Trek V.
Yeah, that was weird.
Speaking of Star Trek V.
What?
well, we were just speaking about Star Trek V.
Step away from the console.
That's not in Star Trek.
It's important that you. Yeah.
No, I was gonna give a plug over to our old buddies at the Unplanned Trek.
Their
Patreon. They've got, we've mentioned it before, but they've got this gag on their Patreon where you give them a little bit of money and you get another Patreon, and they're analyzing Star Trek V 1 minute at a time. The podcast's not 1 minute.
Minute at a time.
That's right.
1 minute of Star Trek V.
Minute at a time.
Minute at a time.
Yeah. So eventually they're going to get to Uhura doing her little weird fan dance business, singing that song.
Mm-hmm.
They're
going to have to talk about it for like an hour or, you know, for an extended period of
time.
That's
intense.
About that 1 minute.
Those guys are intense.
Yeah, they are. They're the premier jam eaters from Tasmania.
For real.
Unplanned Trek. Oh, by the way,
Jammy Tears.
Down
in
Tasmania.
If you're really into wearing jammies, you're a Jammy Tear.
Go listen.
Jammies.
As opposed to a jam eater, you're a Jammy Tear.
If you haven't yet, go listen to episode 66 of Unplanned Trek.
I'm a Jammy Tear.
In which I guessed and we discuss the Menagerie Part 2. And that was cool. And interestingly enough, involves Captain Pike. Mm-hmm. Although this episode doesn't involve all that much Captain Pike.
No.
But he's got some serious hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's even like more.
I think they've got two gags.
That's why they made him fleet captain.
They keep going. He's got fleet captain.
Okay. Man. All right. We got multiple things going on here. First of all, No. This is good. Because there's the two gags that they're doing, the running gags on Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Gag number one is they've reverted to TOS style, hilariously inconsistent star dates. So that's gag number one, which I think is awesome. And I also think it's, like, I respect that some people online get really aggravated, but I think it's hilarious that they're doing that.
This one was 2394.8 from the start.
See, it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Jumping all over the place. That's great. The other running gag is doing increasingly hilarious stuff with Captain Pike's hair.
Captain.
This time, the grays were all, like, spiderwebbed out, up and about. It was like extra like sculpted his like wave of hair like up.
I'd have to double check because, you know, we'd have to go back, and this is a good excuse to go back and watch from the beginning. I think they're giving him a different hairstyle in every episode.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sometimes with a reason and sometimes not. In Among the Lotus Eaters, his hair was parted the opposite direction because he was in disguise.
That's hilarious.
You know? But anyway, we'll have to double check on that.
Yeah, these are... all out of order. So, like, I have for the season 2, episode 1, The Broken Circle took place at 2369.2. But then season 2, episode 5, Charades from last week took place on 1789.3. Yeah. And then this week was 2394.8. So they're going all over the place.
They should do an episode where he has no hair at all.
Nothing at all. Nothing at all.
Where he has to shave his head. Because he's going to go to that planet of what's the bald-headed Star Trek 1, the motion picture people? You know?
The Deltons.
The Deltons. Yeah, he's going to go to planet Delta.
Yeah, Delta something around.
Do you ever see that skit where they're all like, Delta, 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 can I help you, help you, help you?
Was that about the Delta Airlines?
No, it was that sorority skit on SNL.
Oh,
wait. Doesn't sound very good. Delta, was it good? Yeah. Was it a good sketch?
It was a classic sketch.
They did a few of those.
I don't know that one. I know the one with the cheeseburgers.
Cheeseburger.
It could get a hamburger. Mm. No hamburger, cheeseburger.
It has someone in it. Sorry,
a few people.
Sorry, I'm trying to find the name of the person. I keep forgetting her name, but she was in SNL. It's not important.
Okay,
it's not important.
All right, Dan is stating that it's not important. His body language seems to suggest it's very important.
Melanie Hutzel.
Right.
Of course. All right.
Melanie Hutzel.
There you go. Or whatever. All right.
She remembers her name.
She goes like, "Oh my God, I could die." You know, it's like really funny back in the early 90s.
It was.
In the early 90s was like at the tail end of all the lead poisoning.
Yeah, I rewatched that skit though, and the audience just isn't laughing that much, but somehow it became this famous skit. Anyway, okay. Look, that's not important.
Let's press on.
Stop egging me on, guys.
This is a new segment called Dan insists it's not important.
But I tell you anyway.
It's no big deal, guys, but you know.
No big deal. All right. Anyway, yeah. But yeah, what I was going to say is, episode 66, Unplanned Trek, go check it out. That was a super fun time. Those guys are awesome. I look forward to getting on that show again. And you guys should join them. You guys would have a fun time talking to them. So
that would be awesome.
What kind of jam do they?
I don't know. You have to ask them next time.
But I'm a
Vegemite.
That's not a jam. Vegemite's not a jam.
But it's a spread.
It's a spread. It's made out of folate.
It's not like a
skim off of the top of the beer.
They eat
production.
Right. Marmite. I think it's Marmite.
Well, there's Marmite and there's Vegemite.
That's what the British eat.
I can't remember. One eats one. Whatever.
Write in at feedback@StarTrek.com. Subject line, Vegemite versus Marmite.
We should do a podcast on that.
It's got Meat-a-mite. Alrighty. Moving right along.
So you say they're jam eaters. I say I'm a jam eater. Because I wear jammies.
You keep saying jammy tier.
Like a musketeer, but I'm a jammy tier.
Musketeer.
Wait. So... a musketeer is a person who carries a musket.
Yeah.
So a jammeteer is somebody who carries jam?
I would think if it's one that more...
pajamas.
It's more that one who celebrates jammies.
Are you a jamophiliac?
No, not jam. Jammies.
Pajamas.
Jammies. Like when you wear jammies to bed.
He's saying pajamas.
Are you a jamophasiac?
No, jammeteer. Jammeteer.
I don't wear jammies.
Jesse, is Dan talking about pajamas?
Yes.
All right. You know what I'm talking
about. He's talking about, he's trying to say pajamas.
Okay. All right.
He's saying jammies.
I'm sure he's saying all sorts of things. anything else on Pike? Because we got
Malarkey.
I
think we should move on. Yeah.
It's almost break time.
Already? We haven't even really talked about the episode.
Yeah, we've been talking
Pike
about the episode.
Pike is a temporary fleet captain because he's controlling a bunch of stuff. That's kind of
Oh, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. Because that's a whole funny little thing that they did there.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. Okay.
Is it break time yet?
It's almost break time, but I can make one point before break time. Okay. I promise you I can conclude this point
He's going to break it down before the break time.
They are doing something very clever and sneaky here with this whole fleet captain business. Do you know why it's clever and sneaky, this whole fleet captain business? I'll tell you why. Because in the menagerie, part one, there's a whole business with Pike. Goes on in that episode of TOS. It's a two-part episode of TOS.
Right.
In that episode, Kirk mentions that he met Pike just after he was promoted to fleet captain.
Oh, look at you.
And everyone was always like, oh, that means he can't meet Pike on Strange New Worlds, because everyone assumed that promoted to fleet captain meant like promoted away from the Enterprise.
Right. Fleet captain sounds like a bullshit rank anyway. So
what they're doing...
Isn't that what an admiral
What
is?
They're doing here...
It's like a Commodores
is they're being sneaky little bleakies. Yeah. sneaky little friendlies.
You could say they're retconning, but not specifically, because they didn't make
it works.
They didn't specify. It was implied what they meant, but it wasn't specified.
It works.
Yeah, man.
All right. So point made, concluded, and that takes us right up to our break time.
USS Farragut.
We're going to have a fun time break. We're going to take a break.
Fun time break.
Fun time break. And when we get back, we will continue. What the fuck are you guys doing? This is ridiculous.
Okay. He just spit-taked
in
my mouth.
Yeah, but he's... Okay. What just happened was just Jesse did an inexplicable spit-take. In the direction of Dan. Yeah. In response to nothing.
Yeah.
Perhaps a delayed response. I don't know. Regardless, as you can tell, this is a perfect time for us to take a very brief break. And when we return, we will continue our discussion of Star Trek Strange New World Season 2, Episode 6, Lost in Translation. Be right back. No peepees?
I don't think so. Not yet.
Poopies? Poopies.
Okay. All right, we're back. With that, we're back. We took a good break.
It was a good hard break.
So this episode is sort of set up like there's going to be some sort of
you're losing using a lot of S words.
Okay.
It's called an onomatopoeia.
This episode is sort of set up. Anyway, sorry, I apologize.
He's a wordsmith.
Apparently. Yeah. What was that? I can't even remember the point I was making.
You got your notes.
That's on you, man.
No, they made a big deal about this whole station about being a jumping off point.
Yeah, right.
What the fuck?
Like it's on the frontier or something?
I don't know what Patrick's problem is tonight. I'm not going to go on until he specifies what his problem is.
What is his problem?
I don't know. It makes it hard to make a point, though.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was taking a drink. You said station.
Oh.
And it got me laughing. Yeah. It got the danger of having my mouth full of drink.
Yeah.
And now the drink is dribbling down my chin.
Not everybody knows what that's a reference
What's
to.
What's he drinking? Is he drinking a Red Bull?
I'm drinking a Red Bull, sugar-free Red Bull imported from Austria in Europe. And yes, so station. Nobody, yes, you're right. Many people will not know what that's a reference to. That is a reference to Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Yeah.
And there is a character by the name of Station.
Station.
And that information is not sufficient to make you understand why I would be giggling.
Not really.
You'd have to watch the film.
I don't actually have an isolated clip of it, because I always append it to the end of some kind of scene like that I play. I'll play some like 20-second scene, and then someone will say station.
Dan will sometimes play this station.
But I don't actually have the sound effect by itself. Not that it would be difficult to get. Anyways, so this thing, this space thing that we have,
The refinery?
Yeah, the refinery.
Refinery?
Yes.
So it allows them to get a bunch of good gas.
Deuterium?
And it allow, and
it, was it deuterium?
Yeah, deuterium. Deuterium, which is a real thing.
Yeah, that, isn't that like helium with like a couple extra protons or some business?
It's a
hydrogen.
It's an isotope of hydrogen.
Oh yeah, hydrogen. It's got like an extra. Even it's better. Got an extra business. Yeah. And then you got tritium.
So is that
deuterium
what,
is like heavy, the, heavy.
I think they
heavy water. You make it with deuterium and oxygen.
The farthest back I know of deuterium is from Voyager, but I'm sure they probably used it before that.
They talk about it in the hulls, don't they?
I mean, but I didn't know that that was what fueled the starship. I didn't know that.
Well, you got the flux capacitor, you got dilithium, and then I guess you got deuterium.
Yeah.
You got to get squish all that stuff
anyway,
together.
Anyway, so
they use it for things, and they use the dilithium for other things.
So they had the cool gas station where all they have to do is drive through, and it sucks in all the gas, and then it's like all these places they can explore, and then it also is a strategic place for the Gorn. This is like some serious shit. It's like a trifecta of awesomeness, you know?
Yeah.
And so,
and very TOS style, more strategy, more about like the territories and stuff.
Yeah. And so I thought that they could have gone two directions, I guess, or they could have gone several directions, but one direction they could have gone with is if they had established early on that Uhura was seeing this shit related to the station, they could have turned it into a whole episode about like, you know, the bureaucracy, or not necessarily bureaucracy, but just sort of like, them being
doing
like,
an environmental review kind of thing,
something like that. Just being like, well, we need the energy, and then having to take it up to the admirals and then they'd have to go back and forth, be like, you know, it is a real shame,
the
but
admirals.
We gotta figure this out for the next month, you know, that kind of thing. But they sort of established the connection like too late in the episode to do something like that. But it was the only reason I bring it up because it seemed like they really talked about how important this thing, this space thing. Some might call
I'm good
it a
now.
Station.
I'm good. I'm not currently drinking.
Okay.
And we're
it's
over.
It's a station. It's a fuel refinery.
Right. And they talk about how super important it is, but the resolution, and it's actually a classic sort of Star Trek resolution where they make this sort of sweeping, like drastic decision based because someone on the crew is basically hallucinating.
Because they trust their crew
members. It's
blowing
a first contact.
Right. And they're basically like, Uhura is literally the only person that knows that this is happening. And they just blow it up without even talking to the admirals.
That jumped out of the ship.
Yeah. Ramon.
Saul Ramon.
Which, I don't want, I mean, you guys can spoil it if you want, but this was that they used that same thing for Ramon. They did that in Picard season 3 too, when Ramon went flying out the
and
airlock.
He also he froze up a little too quickly. Ramon. We've discussed, but I believe we've discussed in the past, you got about a minute or so before you get all screwed
I think
up.
It was like the same timeline and same like graphic style as like when they did it in Picard when a character.
It was very similar.
It was very similar.
Are you suggesting that they have a macro? They click a button and it's just like guy out the window.
They have a photo.
Are you suggesting sabotage?
Sabotage.
I'm suggesting sabotage. Anyways, so I just thought it's kind of like you'd think they would bring this shit up to higher levels before they would up and destroy this major project that's obviously been under work for a long ass time.
Wow.
And they were just like, well, let's just blow it up now. Yeah. Like, just because based on your word, like I said, it is a very, it is not unusual for Star Trek for them to believe like they're hallucinating crew members, which is actually kind of neat. You know, this idea of keeping an open mind. And
it's
stuff.
The Enterprise, but, and it's like Pike. And I think they're just going to get away with that shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like it was some small little side thing that increased like, you know, efficiency by 0.5% and, you know, or whatever, you know, like it had a very purposeful purpose.
They went there to fix it. It was a crucial piece of infrastructure.
It was very obviously an important piece of equipment that wasn't just some kind of bullshit. It was a very specific, awesome thing. My words are like escaping me, but anyways, that's what my point
it
was.
It was crucial.
You said your words are escaping you, and I imagine like little word bubbles floating out.
Yeah,
I saw them.
Well, there
bubbles.
It goes.
Saw them word bubbles.
Okay, so this episode, I knew it was the old aliens in the nebula gag. 10 seconds in,
totally.
Not, and I'm not exaggerating. I don't mean at the end of the teaser when Uhura hears crazy sounds and then sees something. I mean, within 10 seconds, they're like, oh, there's a nebula. I was like, oh, there's going to be creatures in the nebula, and they're going to fuck it up. And
they made that nebula look really cool.
Now, okay, it was super obvious what was going on here, partly because this is a play on, like, the Devil in the Dark on TOS with the Horta, home soil. In TNG with the, you know, the little creatures that are all like ugly bags of mostly water. Even on Strange New Worlds last season in the Elysian Kingdom, there was a creature in a nebula, right? So that was a slightly different setup, but those two other Star Trek stories, as well as a whole bunch of other Star Trek stories, have some sort of variation on the, oh, we are accidentally fucking some shit up. What do we do? And that's, you know, you were referring to like one version of that story, like Dan was talking about, was where you have the moral debate about like what's right and wrong. In this case, it's the mystery. It's like, what's going on? It's like, oh, we figured it out. And then it was like, we want to fix that as soon as we can.
Right. Well, and the trick about arguing with like the point of the episode is what I want to say is like, you know, it could have warranted at least a discussion before they blew that thing up. But on the other hand, it's hard to argue with it, because that's kind of the point of the show and episode.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Well, it was set up to be, we got to do something now. Otherwise they're torturing. These
right.
Creatures.
And so that was the point, is that they had to take these drastic measures and not discuss it. It wasn't a plot convenience. More as it was like, yeah, that's how much they love each other, or yeah, something, which is like kind of weird, but it's like, okay, I guess it's been established
how much they love each other.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of been established in Star Trek before
what I have not made clear yet, though, is though the core structure of the plot was super obvious, it didn't matter. And that's when it doesn't matter. Just you can reuse storylines, you can reuse concepts when you do them awesomely. And Celia Gooding is awesome as Uhura, and the production design was great again.
I was into the Hemmer zombie. The character lended himself to being a terrifying zombie. Yeah.
All those dreamscape things, like the whole crash shuttle business and stuff, just
totally.
It was like intense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just can't speak highly enough of Celia Gooding's portrayal of Uhura, because she gets all that, like the assertiveness, but also the insecurity and all the, you know, all this stuff going on in this character's head. You can feel it through the screen.
When Mbenga told her that she like had to take time off work to go, and I didn't count it as a duty moment, because he says duty.
Yeah.
So he said the word.
So you didn't take a clip of him saying duty.
Duty, because he didn't
because
say duty.
It doesn't sound like he says duty.
He didn't say duty, yeah. But
they'll make faces at each other.
Yeah, because she looks at him like, you can't take me off duty. And he looks like, back at her, he's like, really? Yeah, I can do that. I can, try me.
This episode has a lot of good face business.
And the other good, I'm a big fan of, like, Janeway's was always good at making some good faces. Yeah. But the Uhura did that earlier, a couple... either last episode or the one before, when it was the Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow at the beginning and end of the episode when Lon comes
at the beginning and the end
at the beginning Lon
at the beginning and the end
at the
beginning and the end
when Lon comes in at the beginning of the episode and is all like not supposed to be there, and at the end when she's wearing some funky clothes, both times like Uhura's looking at her like, what's going on here, and like giving her that look. So I'm a big fan of the looks. Uhura's looks.
Wait,
I know that sounds really
perfect. You're a big fan of Uhura's looks?
Okay, that's not what I meant.
It's got misogyny.
I meant as in like plural noun.
It's got toxic masculinity.
Plural of a noun. Plural noun, plural. A plural noun.
Okay.
The collection of a look. She has many... She creates this look, and she does it several different times,
yes.
And she presents them.
And you mean like the facial expressions?
Facial expressions, yes. That's what I mean about her look.
Not a series of clever outfits.
I didn't even cross my mind. So
okay.
I don't know.
All right. Good. All right.
Well, we'll all right then.
So.
No, Uhura's character is great. I really enjoy when they've done these episodes focusing on her, because we are, again, similar to Kirk and with some of these other characters, we're getting to flesh out this character, learn more about her background, her motivations, and all that sort of stuff. And this was a wonderful story, kind of expanding on a fact that we already knew about her, that she had endured this tragedy where I guess it was her parents and her brother, I believe, were killed in a shuttle accident. And so, yeah, I mean, this unlike, I think we were talking last week, and last week's episode didn't have many themes. It was just sort of silly. Whereas this one very clearly was wrestling with some ideas about how do you approach and deal with the idea of death and loss and
love and family and all that stuff.
Yeah, all that.
You even had
stuff.
That with some of that with J. Kirk and S. Kirk. Like,
yeah. Well, that's okay. So we kind of have mentioned that
they had a whole thing going.
That a lot of Strange New Worlds episodes are very TOS-like in structure and sort of how they're built. Among the Lotus Eaters was one example, but you know, a lot of them have that kind of real TOS feel.
There was even three-dimensional chess.
This episode has more of a TNG feel.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
And not just in the structure of the story, like the story they're telling and what they're focusing on in terms of the thematic elements, but even the direction, how they framed people, camera position.
Even the band at the end reminded me of TNG.
Yeah, the band at the end of the jazz.
It was fucking jazz.
Although, mm-hmm. I would say that pullout shot, which was brilliant. That was like a really, really well done shot.
Did you ever see who was playing piano? You saw everybody in the band, but you never saw the piano.
Did not see the piano.
The piano was prominent, but like.
I didn't even notice.
You could hear the piano, but you didn't see the piano. Yeah. But I felt that was more of a Deep Space Nine thing. I thought that the actual pullout was like they were doing a little bit more fun camera stuff on Deep Space Nine. Yeah. But the concept of the 10 forward style meeting.
Yeah, see, the 10 forward style jam session is more intimate. That one was more like had a big stage and something about it seemed like there was more separation between the band and the audience. But like when the 10 forward.
There
was
a lot more people in the old school Enterprise. Right?
In the 10 forward episode, like it just felt like they were in a corner of the room just kind of playing, jamming together, you know. So I don't know. Right. 10 forward seemed more intimate.
Nightbird.
Yeah, why are you looking at me, man?
You're supposed to say Nightbird.
I don't know nothing about no music.
You're supposed to say Nightbird.
Oh, I thought, okay, Nightbird.
Nightbird.
Okay, we all said Nightbird.
Yeah.
We all said it.
Yes, we all said it.
Mm-hmm. DS9, what was that guy's name in DS9 who's the hologram singer?
Yeah, Jimmy Pistone.
Yeah,
yeah, it was Jimmy Pistone.
No, wasn't it like
he was friends with Quark and Chief Pistone? O'Brien. Yeah, his name was Corby Fenelwith.
Chief O'Brien.
Yeah, Chief O'Brien programmed Corby Fenelwith to sing tunes, and that was on Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, check it out. Okay,
They never played in Quark's bar though.
Quark?
Yeah, they never played in Quark's bar.
Well, they were in Quark's bar by virtue of the fact that Quark had the holosuites. And that was a holosuite program.
You
had to go into Quark's bar, the holosuite in order to go enjoy
this
the
This was actually the in the station's mess hall station place.
This one,
forward.
Yes. This
like
one.
In 10 forward was...
This was the version of... Yeah.
But you felt the shot was more like DS9.
Yes, the idea of it. I don't know. Why are you even listening to me? You know what I mean? You don't need to be listening to me, my opinions about shit.
No, I was
I'm
clarifying.
Just tossing it out there. It's a vibe
it
thing.
It still had a very TOS feel to it.
Now the TOS, particularly the music, SNW, as I like to say, SNW. Strange New Worlds.
Anything with that damn W letter in is fucked up.
You put the W because it's got the extra syllables. There's so many syllables in a W. Wubble U W. www. It's got StarTrek.com/record. Send in your messages. What are we talking about? Oh, yeah. Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Season 2, Episode 6, Lost in Translation, The Bar.
Just in case.
Anything about the bar? It seems like a nice place to hang out.
You know, W.
Is that real liquor there?
W is the only letter that is more than one syllable, and it's three syllables.
Did you go through the whole alphabet in your head while I was doing my jibber jabber?
Yeah, I did. Because I was pretty sure I was right, but I didn't want to sound stupid.
Yeah. Are you still sure that you're right? Do you think that you checked all the letters properly?
Are you sure you didn't sound stupid just then?
L-M-N-I-T.
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
You can try it at home.
All right. Why don't you do that? Well,
try it now.
Try it right now.
We'll wait.
Yeah, we'll just wait. Yeah. It'll just take a second. You should be on like M by now.
Oh, I'm already through. That's how good I am.
All right. Well, you know, not everyone's got a fast brain like you, Dan.
Yeah. Well,
speedy little brain.
So, are there any letters that have characters? They're characters.
Oh,
I write on a computer.
Maybe in other languages.
They're not letters. They're characters on a computer screen.
I didn't do it. If you're asking me, I didn't do it in my brain. I didn't. I was focusing on the comedy performance.
I don't say letters. I say characters.
I was focusing on the timing, on the comedy timing, the comedic timing, for podcasting purposes.
Are we still doing that?
What do you mean? It's got Star Trek podcast?
No, it's comedic timing.
I'm always doing that.
You know, I think in a sense we were.
Mm-hmm.
But now that's concluded as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That was some real performance.
Star Trek.
Performance art shit.
Performance Star Trek art.
Uhura drinks Saurian brandy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I mean,
only like a sip or two, and then she storms in.
Yeah, I noticed that. Like, I know.
Well,
that,
she was all like, she well, wasn't, I know, wanted to put up with shit.
I know she didn't want to put up with shit, but she just like left a full drink there. Yeah, she could have like taken it somewhere else.
Yeah, that's it's what like, happens when you live like, in the communist society.
It's like when you're watching some show and people like put out a cigarette all like prematurely. Mm. It's like, why did you put your cigarette out? Why didn't you just finish your fucking cigarette?
Well, we can tell that Uhura probably does not have a drinking problem because she found that she needed to deal with her stress by leaving the booze.
That's true. That's true.
Well, I mean, she didn't.
She's healthy. Yes.
She didn't consider like drinking more to relieve stress. She was like,
what if the
drink.
Reason she was leaving was because she was going to go to her quarters and take some opiates?
Ah, that's why she had the good stuff back there. She couldn't wait.
No, okay.
That's not true.
That's not. Yeah, that's not.
I don't think they had them.
But she thought that James Kirk was hitting on her, and he was like, "No, that's my brother Sam who does that." Sam.
Oh, I was wondering.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about Kirk.
Is that what he meant, or did he, or did when he says to her, "Oh, you know my brother Sam."
Yeah,
I couldn't tell if, like, you seem, Dan, you seem to have interpreted as he was like, "Oh, because since my brother Sam is a sleazebag, you're gonna think I'm a sleazebag." I initially interpreted as, "Oh, my brother Sam told you that I'm a sleazebag." I just kind of assumed that. I don't know. But I never had brothers. I grew up with sisters.
Okay.
Dan, you've had brothers.
You've got two brothers.
You can help us interpret the whole
two
whole
brothers.
No, I never even considered.
Jesse and I only have sisters.
So the line was, "I really don't want to be hit on right now." And Kirk goes, "Oh, you're friends with Sam." Now that I think of it, you might be right, honestly. Because
but now that I think of it, you might be right.
Well, it makes sense. Like, why would she think that her brother was sleazy because he was sleazy?
He's like a xeno-orthodontist.
It makes more sense that Kirk.
Xeno-orthodontist. I want a whole Star Trek spinoff now. Go about xeno-orthodontia.
No, he's a xeno-anthropologist.
Yes, he's a xeno-anthropologist, but same as Michael Burnham.
It makes more sense that, that she would think that because Sam was talking shit. Because Sam, there's that whole, like, you know, Sam, I can understand. I bet you James Kirk was a kind of a cocky dick growing up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Kirk is a jerk, right?
Kirk is a jerk.
You know, like in that TAS episode where Kirk, like somebody writes on the back of Kirk's shirt, and write Kirk is a jerk.
Right.
It's like a whole thing. Kirk is a jerk.
We did that one, didn't we?
I don't know. I think we did.
I think we did.
Well, I have to go watch them all.
Shit.
But Sam was kind of being like a little weak when he was like, "Why do you have to like try to be so good all the time?" You know?
Oh,
I was like,
yeah.
I was like, kind of like, come on,
I
man.
Know. Yeah.
Kirk was right. James Kirk was right there. He was like, "What, you're getting mad at me?" But Kirk, James
don't
Kirk,
be such a nerd.
But James Kirk was a dick though, because he kept being like, "Oh,
he's
like,
making fun of astro or xenobiology."
Yeah, like, right. Because like
anthropology,
like the fucking
what's new and exciting,
which is a cool subject,
and the fucking cool
everything. New and exciting.
Yeah, I know, right? I like that line.
And the cool aliens that like were the whole subject of the episode, and Sam's like, "I'm gonna write about those awesome aliens," and James Kirk is like, "Yeah, whatever,
yeah,
loser."
I know.
Yeah. Loser, you fucking lame.
So I'm sure he's a dick, but I just think Sam got mad at him for the wrong reasons. You know, why do you have to be so good? You know,
right,
what was he supposed to hold himself back? I guess it's because he thinks like he's doing it just to try to show him up or something.
The thing is you can watch that, and there's ways to make all that sort of make sense. You have to fill in a lot of storyline that we just haven't seen, because we haven't seen them grow up together. We don't know that much about how their relationship is like, how it's structured. We're learning a little bit about that now, right? We're getting little bits and pieces, but you sort of have to extrapolate, and you can see that there is some sort of rivalry that's been going on, and that they've chosen different paths in life.
Which one is older? We don't know.
It's not 100% clear. Because
the other dude's actually named after the dad.
Which you'd normally think would be the older brother.
Right.
If his father, George Kirk, was actually super old school.
But we all know the younger brother is always the loser.
Well.
Aren't you the younger brother?
Yeah.
Well, you're the middle brother.
Well.
Yeah,
yeah,
you're the Jan.
That's true. Shit, dude. I'm the Jan.
Oh, you're the Jan.
That's true. I am the middle.
Marsha,
brother.
Marsha, Marsha. Okay.
I was thinking more back when I was in elementary school. Like, I was always the younger brother.
Yeah.
And then at one point I wasn't.
Yeah, because That dude.
It was just the first thing I identified as, so it sort of stuck with me.
Yeah, no, that's. I think identity.
That's a good point. Because
identity formation is a fascinating process.
It took a while for
process.
That other dude to come along.
So. Yeah, this conversation's getting weird. just dredging up some shit or something.
The process of identity formation is complex and fascinating, and it is interactive. It is interactive with those people we are close proximity to, relatives, friends, etc. So we are not privy to the specific details of Kirk and of James and Sam's relationship, but we get our little bits and pieces here.
Sam's name is George. His first name is George.
Yes, and that we knew from going back as far as TOS.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there was a weird jump in logic, I thought, when S. Kirk was talking to J. Kirk, and they were talking about that alien thing.
S. Kirk and J. Kirk.
S. Kirk was saying, well, there's a theory. It's a little bit fringe, but hear me out. Yeah. That extra-dimensional life forms could actually poke into our space and attach themselves to atoms from our dimension. Mm-hmm. And Kirk says, meaning they aren't sophisticated life forms capable of speech or even language. I thought that was a weird logical jump.
I
don't know where that jump came from.
I agree.
It was weird. It seems like they were missing a few lines.
Now, here's the thing. Yeah. I was going to ask you because I, as longtime listeners will know, I generally speaking do not put the captions on. Mm. No particular problem with captions.
Oh, I've got a caption issue also.
It's just something I just don't do.
I've got a caption issue.
But these guys, particularly Dan sometimes.
Dan will
often have the captions on.
I put the captions on the second view through.
And I wanted to ask, because when I'm watching that episode, I heard the same thing you heard.
Mm-hmm.
Both of you.
Mm-hmm.
Both of you appear to have heard the same thing that I have heard, that all three of us agree.
I heard that Bofa heard it too.
Both of us.
Bofa
on the sofa.
Trifa.
Trifa?
Is that the three version of Bofa?
Bofa. Yeah, it doesn't,
Trifa? Doesn't really work, doesn't, does
the it? The joke doesn't work then.
Trifa.
No. Quarterda. Quarter.
Okay, no, I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry to have sent us that direction.
Quarter da.
Quasi.
Quada. Quadzi. Quadzi. Quadzi.
Okay.
I'm Quadzi.
I'm Quadzi.
Where do you come up with this?
I don't know, man. I'm sleeping at night.
Stream of consciousness.
Trying not to cry.
This is some avant-garde shit. Okay.
You sleep at night?
Feet? They had feet?
Oh my gosh.
All right. Kirk, to all of us.
To all of us here. Each and every one.
To all of us.
A Kirk for each. A Kirk for all. Come Kirk with me.
Dude, I'm Kirking out over here.
Totally.
We all heard Kirk say they're like not capable of like whatever.
Yes.
Right? And you're right. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So
Based upon what S. Kirk said the sentence before. It's like a weird logical jump.
Forget the logical jump.
I can't.
No, you must. You must.
I mustn't.
For the purpose of this point, you must. I just assumed I was mishearing it. And it was just in the way the Jim Carrey guy pronounced it.
Jim Carrey guy.
I mean, he is growing on me as Kirk, but it's still, you know, he's still I'm Fire Marshal Bill.
Whoa, way to pull out
he's
the old references.
Skinny.
But
that's what everyone knows Jim Carrey.
Everybody knows Jim Carrey as like.
Let me tell you something.
Fire Marshal Bill. I assume that I just misheard it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was going to ask you. I'm in the process right now of asking you, having watched the captions, does it say that in the captions? Does it say it the way?
Certain.
You're certain that it does say that.
Meaning they aren't sophisticated life forms capable of speech or even language.
Aren't is not in the captions.
Yes.
Aren't.
See,
I had to emphasize that so you knew I wasn't saying R.
Super Mario.
Super Mario. I love Mario. Sorry, that was beyond inside baseball right there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that confuses me because
I love Mario.
They clearly are intelligent. And they're capable of communicating. So I don't know. One way you could interpret this as he's being exceedingly literal in that they are not capable of language in the human conception of language, and you could argue that communication, you know, language is a subset of communication, but not all communication constitutes a language, mm-hmm. in terms of having a system of syntax and order and all that other business. Okay. It still is a very confusing line, because I thought that the point we're supposed to take away from all this, right, is that there's some floaty dimensional creatures that are communicating with us, that they're getting all fucked up. Mm. They have enough intelligence to communicate that they're getting fucked up.
Yeah, and they have enough intelligence to, like, invade your mind to do it. You know, I mean,
and be all like,
that's pretty sophisticated.
There's that Discovery storyline where, like, those aliens from outside the galaxy,
yeah.
they're like,
they're all like, brr.
Yeah, right. I was just thinking about that too.
They have to figure out how to communicate.
That whole episode was like solving a video game puzzle or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like the aliens where it's different fart smells.
Yeah.
Depending on the, on the fart smells.
Right, different fart smells.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
That might have been like a Hitchhiker's Guide thing or something. Or maybe a John Scalzi. Maybe that's the Android's Dream.
So there were...
It's a good book.
There were two questions there. Of course, the
just to,
what I was saying is that was a weird logical jump, and what Patrick is asserting is that even if it wasn't, like, that's just a weird thing to say about a creature, I guess, that can invade your thoughts and do a little shit like
I
that.
Found
I don't
it
know.
Frustrating and confusing.
Because, like,
in an otherwise excellent episode.
Because communication is just getting your message across, so what speech or language, I mean, I don't know, that's like a weird sort, it's a weird assumption to make.
It's a little odd.
Yeah, a little odd.
It's all a little bit odd.
A little bit weird.
But what's not odd...
They didn't need to have that part of it.
What's not odd is our regular practice, traditional, at least over the last 96 episodes or so, of taking a break. There's a break.
I knew that's where
this
was
going. Oh, another break.
Yeah, it's good.
It's time for another.
It's good for us as hosts. It helps break up our thought process a little bit. You know, if we get down one of our weird little spirals, you know, and folks who've gone back and listened to much older episodes, you will know what we're talking about here, where we could get a little bit, you know.
We're going to have real cookies.
A little bit. We could just get a little bit, if you know what I mean.
A little bit.
You want a little classic?
They're
it's
making
got
real cookies.
We could, but having the break helps us. It also helps the audience because you're having so much fun.
I think they get it.
No, they don't all get it.
Because you need a little break.
No, they don't all get it. I'm just saying. I just want to justify that you guys.
Not
you know,
everybody's going to get a break.
It's like you want the candy, but you can't have you can't have too much candy. Sometimes you got to take a little break from
it. It hurts your teeth.
Yeah, it's not good for your teeth.
It's too sweet.
So us taking
if someone
break,
is asking,
lets you reset your brain a little
right
bit.
Now, you can take your headphones off and answer that question and come back real quick, and you wouldn't miss anything.
Are you talking about the audience, people?
What the hell are you talking about?
I guess that's technically true. Okay, but we will be taking a break, and then when we come back from the break, we will conclude our discussion of Star Trek Strange New World Season 2, Episode 6, Lost in Translation.
We're gonna try.
And we will be right back. Okay, are we back?
I am called Yellow.
Was that all the break?
That was all the break you're gonna get.
Oh.
There's no more breaks tonight.
James Cook. James Cook.
La'an Noonien Singh.
James Cook.
I'm just playing sound effects
Monster.
Over here.
Malaki. My name is Niota. is Malaki.
No rhymer nor reason.
I used to have a cat named Camille.
Okay, so
my name is Niota.
I
don't need a cookie.
In true TNG style.
Hey, Jesse.
Hey,
Jesse.
Hey, what?
I hear the mess is serving real cookies.
I know, right? Real cookies.
Yeah. We've talked about how this has a sort of a TNG feel to
it's
it.
It's got Quattro Triticale.
It's going to be a bit of that.
Say what now?
Jesse made a reference to Quattro Triticale.
Nice, I heard that.
From the Trouble with Tribbles.
Cookies out of them.
And they make the cookies out of it. Quattro Triticale. Quinto.
Big old cookies.
In the TAS episode, wasn't it like Quinto Triticale or something?
Yeah.
That is malarkey.
Yeah, it is a bit malarkey. Well, I'm getting distracted from my own point, which was... something about this, you know,
you have a problem.
No, it's related to this whole TNG... business. But yeah, I don't really remember what the point was.
I'm sorry.
Let's forget about it.
Just forget about
I probably like wrote it down somewhere in in the thing. Oh, I remember what the point I remember what the point was.
Good.
It was
I'm
that
so excited.
TNG episodes, a lot of times the A and B or A, B, and C stories, you know, sometimes they were very disconnected. Other times they were more thematically close. And in fact, often they were thematically close, at least across one or two dimensions. And I think that's the case here, which maybe adds a little bit to that TNG flavor, because you've got the overall like sci-fi story about blah, blah, blah. And Uhura is ultimately dealing with facing death, facing loss, and getting over the fear that that might hold her back as a Starfleet officer. All right. So that's sort of like the main thing going on. Mm. But then you've got the whole thing with Pelia pissing off Una, right?
Sabotage.
She's a space hitter.
Sabotage.
Do you have? There is a bunch of sabotages. In
sabotage.
This. I don't know if you have all of them.
Sabotage.
Sabotage.
Saboteurs.
Does saboteur count?
Saboteurs. Sabotage.
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 Yeah.
Sabotage.
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 How long until I'm
sabotaging?
Sabotage.
All right, that's
how long until I'm sabotaging the ship?
Completely absurd.
Sabotage.
Completely absurd.
Sabotage.
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 Yeah, it's
is that copyright infringement?
No, yeah, it's good.
Sabotage.
Sabotage.
I hope not, because then you know what we'd be doing to our podcast?
Yes.
Sabotage.
Okay. The long and the short of my
Ooh,
point.
I was like really tense until we got to do that. Yeah, I was like, yeah. Oh, we're good to. We can't talk about this episode without
gotta
saying
get it out.
Gonna do
sabotage.
They must have pulled out all the sabotage stops.
Seriously, they must have been aware of that going
into
this episode.
Yeah, they've been saying. No, not just going into this episode. I've right. noticed Star Trek has been using the word sabotage a lot.
Yeah, they have
lately.
Been.
Picard was using it. Was in that series as well. Okay.
Okay.
My point.
It's like more people are paying attention to the animated series.
That too. Yeah. Which is important.
You see a lot of the...
it's good stuff.
The last piece of sabotage. Sabotage.
Sabotage.
The planet is a natural trap, but that's not enough.
You suggest sabotage, Captain?
Suppose it camouflaged itself.
No, that's not...
Camouflage!
Suppose it camouflaged itself.
Camouflage.
Suppose it... Camel
sabotage.
Sabotage. Suppose it sabotage itself.
Camel massage. Okay.
Subterfuge.
Subterfuge. I have that labeled sabotage.
Anyway.
In parentheses. I subterfuge, and in parentheses it says sabotage.
Subterfuge. Suppose it camouflaged itself.
Frozen.
Subterfuge.
You're sabotage.
Okay.
The themes of the various plots, because there was also the it's a small plot, but the Spock and Chapel plot, which is mostly just that chess scene, also about family and a form of it, right? A relationship building, right? Mm-hmm. And having to deal with those things. I really liked a lot of the. I mean, the writing in this episode, I thought overall was really good, but I really liked the little fun little bits, like when Spock was like, your move. Mm-hmm. But what he meant was he didn't only mean in chess. He also meant in sort of defining the relationship.
Yeah.
Right? Your move.
You're right.
Because he was all like, do I need, is there something to tell them about? You know, is there, because Spock was suggesting to Chapel that they have a nascent relationship and that if they have a relationship, they should be reporting it to Starfleet, to their superiors, in order to deal with the anti-whatever fraternization laws.
B'Elanna's on it.
No, she's not.
And so right. he's
actually a civilian.
He's like, are we going? No, she's in Starfleet.
Oh, okay. I thought she was like a civilian.
No, I believe
contractor type.
I believe she's in Starfleet through Starfleet Medical.
She gets her own special uniform. Is that just medical uniform?
That's the medical.
And Benga doesn't wear that.
That's the standard.
Well, he's like the chief. You know,
he's
I could
an
be.
Officer.
I retract. I don't want to. I retract that. I don't want to make an assumption. I mean, I'm making an assumption, man. It could be an incorrect assumption. I don't know if it's been stated outright what Chapel's deal is.
Yeah.
But the implication is they're working together, and whatever her role that Spock certainly thought it would be problematic with the fraternization rules if they didn't report the relationship.
He's a pretty senior officer
that
on
too.
The ship.
He's like the mm-hmm. second officer, I guess. But ultimately, he's saying, are we going steady or not?
Right.
That's what he wants to do. Right. He's using the rules to be like, are we going steady?
I don't know if anyone had a problem with the whole Schrodinger's cat like metaphor, but I thought it was kind of interesting.
No, I
thought that was pretty cool, actually.
I like that they
it's always
that they critiqued
one.
It because mm-hmm. I like that they made the point that it does not it's mm-hmm. a classic example of the analogy mm-hmm. not working. Like, what was that last week?
Oh, yeah, with the going under the wave is calm, and just like going into the space-time tunnel is it's rough on the outside but smooth on the inside.
Yeah, the analogies are not
always like my bum.
Accurate, and they set that up last week, and then they hit the eight ball in with the cue ball. I don't know what analogy
ball.
I should be using.
They hit the eight ball in with the cue ball, but not the nine ball.
Whatever
ball.
I might not ball. Be using
ball.
The right
ball.
Metaphors.
Ball.
When it comes
ball.
To my discussion
ball.
Of the analogies. But the Schrodinger's cat, just to clarify, the Schrodinger's cat analogy is a description of quantum mechanics where it suggests that if you put a cat in a box with a bit of a radioactive material
or some cheese,
which randomly emits
or give them some
radiation
cheese.
Don't
give them onions.
You use that
don't
to
give them
activate
chocolate.
A device that releases some poison
don't
into
feed,
the box.
Don't feed your cat liverwurst because it has onions in it.
And because this is because the release of the ionizing radiation is a quantum mechanical process, and it's going to trigger the poison trap, the idea is that this was an example of how you wouldn't know whether the cat was alive or dead till you looked in the box.
Right.
Now, but that is a macro
system. I used to have a cat named Camille.
That was a macro system, not the quantum mechanical level
she
system.
Used to
so
have a cat,
analogy,
but it got quantum size.
That quantum effect about referring to observation is not relevant in the context of a cat in a box. So the analogy fails.
No,
however, the analogy is useful as long as people know that it doesn't work in real life. And that's what it was cool that they made that distinction.
What they were trying to connect to it, I guess, was this the one part of like once you start like it starts being viewed from another perspective is basically what they're saying, from another sort of angle, another reference point, that it's like the fact that now we have to like constantly define where we are so we don't lose our jobs or whatever Starfleet's rules are about that. That itself, the process of like knowing that it exists in that way, putting it, defining it, putting a label on it, the fact that you're even doing that is going to be affecting it. So
it's probably
that would
not,
be more
they
about
they don't have too many rules. It's just like you just report it and they're like, yeah, whatever.
What's the rule about when you observe animals, they like the process of observing them is what also changes the way they behave?
No, well, that's I mean there's also the Heisenberg uncertainty principle which says the same thing, which also by the way is not commonly understood correctly. Hmm. But yes, the basic idea is that if you observe something, you're interfering with it, and so as a result, you're never going to actually be able to observe it in its natural state.
So I would say that
from at least from a philosophical perspective, there's merit to that argument.
Yeah, I think that would be applicable
all of
to
this,
what the
all of this being
is.
Said, I think the key points are it's cool that they made that distinction in the Schrodinger's cat analogy, where it's like yes, you can use it to make a point. But while also in a nerdly, awesome nerdly fashion, making the point that it's not an accurate
super
thing.
Super nerdly, yeah.
But pulling back from all of that, fundamentally, as I said, Spock has used the regulations to try to be like, are we going steady?
Yeah.
And Chapel has been like, no, we're totally not. Mm-hmm. I know she's trying to be ambiguous about it, but I think the point we're supposed to take away from it is there is stuff that we are still not fully aware of in Chapel's past that makes her reticent to get involved.
Spock also said sector. I know, like, sector. We've already established that he does this. But for some reason, the Sektor one, I was like, well, they did that on purpose. They did that on purpose. That Sektor.
Of course they did it on purpose. I mean, most of the things they do in the show, they do on purpose.
No, I know. It's just like, that wasn't like a sly reference. That was just
at
like,
at the end, like, Spock all, like, shows up to take care of, like, Sam Kirk's, like, glass.
Oh, yeah.
Because he just, like, he's still cleaning up after Sam.
Because J. Kirk was all like, you know, he can be. And then Spock was like, frustrating. And
that's why it was hilarious that they showed that in the previously on Star.
I know.
Like, why are they showing that scene? With the crumbs, you know, because just demonstrating that Spock is like gets aggravated when there's a mess about.
Mm-hmm. Una accused Paley of being a space hippie.
Yeah,
that was
so
funny.
So
they did that on purpose too, don't you think, Dan?
I meant that they weren't being like Sektor, you didn't get it. They were like, we doing that on purpose, you know, as opposed to like just making a joke and being like, I made a joke on purpose. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
I'm not making any jokes.
I just also thought it was a very interesting point that Pelia was making. I kind of read ahead when I was at the beginning.
Read ahead?
It was a little bit awkwardly constructed because the Pelia and Uhura and Pelia and Una had the same thing going on. Right, like when Pelia is talking to Uhura and is like, why have you never talked to me before? Right. Uhura's all like, oh, I'm sorry, I thought I had. I immediately there assumed, I was like, oh, Pelia is about to make the point. It's because I'm the replacement of your close friend. You've just been watching a video of this dude. Mm. They set it up to be a conversation that Pelia would be having with Uhura. But for whatever reason, then they partway through the episode, then they shift that whole thematic conversation over to her and Una.
Right,
and it still works. It's just a little perplexing as to sort of why it happened, like in the middle of the episode, they kind of set it up for Uhura.
It's a little bit jarring,
and it applies to both of them. It applies to almost everybody, but Uhura had the closest relationship with Hammer.
Well, there's also the scenario of Una is the younger but higher ranking one, and Pelia is the older but lower ranking one. So Pelia's gonna like act, you know, the classic just sort of like, oh, I've been around. So there's some insecurity on Una's part. Well, I wouldn't necessarily call it insecurity, but just sort of, readiness and awareness of the fact I can't let her walk over me. Yeah, when Una pointed out to Pelia, like, you know, like,
why aren't you higher?
Yeah, you could tell that they like pissed her off. Yeah, you know,
or at least, you know, she was like,
and she had been her teacher at the academy.
Yeah, and I like that. That was clever.
Yeah,
and she remembered what grade she got.
I wanted to be in that big room with all those consoles. What if they had to run to the other side? And like, what if one of the consoles at the end was getting all fucked? They're probably all networked together, but that means that at any given time, either they have like thousands of people that can be simultaneously working on consoles, or the place is just so big that they need 1,000. Why did they need so many consoles? You know what I mean? Why did they need so many consoles? That's what I'm basically trying to say.
It's the future, man.
Like, I would just guess that, like, oh, well, you want to be able to access one as quickly as possible.
You
got to
access some stuff.
But it's not like they have 1,000. Maybe sometimes they have 1,000 people and they're working 1,000 consoles.
Well, a lot of it is just redundancy.
Like those monkeys with
the
typewriter.
If one of the consoles, like, just explodes, you know, then
you've got 999 backups.
You
mean where all, like, the rocks come out, like the console explodes and a bunch of rocks
like
come out?
Yeah, some cement in there.
Yeah, right.
And, like, some rebar.
Yeah, I don't know. That was a big room. I liked that room. That was a cool room. I wouldn't always want to be in a big room like that with a big row of things going all the way down like that. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Big room.
And then you could get on like a giant monster and ride on its shoulder and be like, I'm on this giant monster. Okay.
The visual world that you are creating, that you are generating in my mind against my will, I might add, is a little bit confusing.
Couldn't you imagine a monster that's like 2 miles tall and it's like walking across the horizon, but it's rising above the horizon? You're like, oh, I'm a giant monster.
Rising above the horizon.
So, I look like I'm moving all slow because I'm so big, but really it's really fast.
All right. So the problem is that initially you were discussing this, all these consoles and stuff, and so I was imagining a utilitarian room with a number of consoles, and then you started talking about flying around on a monster, and I was like, wait, what? And then you said the monster is 2 miles high and looming over the horizon.
So far,
how big is this room of consoles?
So far, like, you can't even see its feet. Its feet are beyond the horizon. That's how big it is, but it's still looming into the sky. Oh, I'm talking about that station. inside the station,
with all the consoles. I know
the doo-doo-ream,
The deuterium.
The deuterium.
Deuterium.
They call that station.
Knock, knock. Who's there? Deuterium.
They call that station the deuterium.
The punchline is up to you, folks.
And so
we give you the setup. You generate the punchline at home.
And so the room was so big. You know how big that big room.
Maybe we should do a Patreon where we provide the punchlines to some of our jokes on the Patreon. Yeah.
Could you imagine if you were the bottom of the middle of the ocean and it was so clear, there was no darkness, it was perfectly clear and there was light everywhere so you could see everything?
But you wouldn't be at the bottom because the light doesn't go more There's than no a light certain... down
there. I am already presenting a ridiculous hypothetical scenario. You can assume that everything would be lit up. That's the point I'm making.
Okay.
I'm
going to allow it. I'm just going to put a little asterisk here. It's just that you're about to ask us a question about a scenario that you've created, but part of the scenario is already implausible.
Well, I mean, it's not like
is affecting the physics of the scenario. So I'm concerned that if we've affected the physics of the scenario already, that is going to affect my answer.
Ridiculous response because I'm like, imagine if you were in the bottom of the ocean, you could see everything, and you're like, well, actually, the light would bounce off funny, so you wouldn't be able to. It's like you wouldn't be sitting at the bottom of the ocean because you'd die of the pressure. The point that's very obviously implied is that this is not going to happen.
Yes, I know. What I'm saying is that you're putting layer upon layer of implausibility. You can have
that's
a few.
That's not the fucking point.
You're going to have a few implausibilities in order to ask a hypothetical question.
No, that's bullshit.
Me sitting at the bottom of the ocean, okay.
You need to free your mind, man.
No, my mind is real fucking free.
You need to free it up and laugh.
I told you, I'm going to allow it. I'm going to believe that I'm sitting at the bottom of the ocean and I can see as clear as day and now... now you're going to tell me about some monster's foot or something?
What you're doing,
what's happening?
I'm very obviously presenting a ridiculous scenario and then you're calling out for it being even more ridiculous than I originally presented it. It's like a hat on a hat, man. It's like just go with it, you know?
Says the guy with multiple hat on a hat. You got multiple levels of implausibility. Anyway, ask me the question so we can get to our
multiple
odds and ends.
Multiple levels of implausibility.
We're
gonna
get to our odds and ends, and then we can get off the air, get home.
Yeah. I'm gonna transport through the universe by breaking down my molecules and then reforming them, and it'll be just like me.
Okay,
Jesse's
got to pee. We've got to go do stuff. So okay, Dan, what is the what's the question? I'm at the bottom of the ocean and I can see everything.
I'm just saying.
What's the point?
I'm just saying it'd be cool, you know? Imagine.
Oh my God, are you fucking serious? Okay.
It wasn't going to be that big of a point.
All right, no, that was very cool.
Oh my Lord.
Okay. Odds and ends. Odds and ends about this episode.
About the closed captioning. Both closed captioning and a transcript I looked up said there was one part where Uhura says, Starfleet's building an outpost here to collect and refine it if they can ever get it working. Mm-hmm. In the closed captioning, it says, if they can ever get it working. They don't put the last G on there.
Put an apostrophe?
No, that would have been fucked up if they put an apostrophe.
Well, I mean, I'm saying if they put an apostrophe, they would suggest they're trying to say whatever. It's some sort of colloquialism, but without the apostrophe, it suggests it's simply an error.
I know, but what's funny is that it's an error on the closed captioning and the online transcript, which leads me to believe that the online transcript is simply just a copy of the closed captioning file website.
That's a fair conclusion to make.
That's just something to notice.
Further evidence.
Odds and ends.
Odds and ends. All right. I hinted at it before. Paul Wesley, his Kirk. It's I'm not a huge fan of his Kirk. He's growing on me.
He's
getting
Kirk.
Once again, it's tricky because you can't be like just be like William Shatner. Like that's not going to work.
Right. I agree 100%.
But at the same time, I do know what you're saying.
I'm not 100% connecting with him as Kirk, but I like the character. I like I like his acting. I like how he interacts with other characters, and in this case, primarily with Uhura. I thought it was all very good. So that's good. I like also that they continue to show that Kirk is better than Spock at chess, which that goes back to TOS and is the opposite, I think, of what many people would assume. It's sort of like how there's that stereotype of Kirk sleeping with all the alien women when he really didn't do it that often. The stereotype of Spock always winning at chess is out there when Kirk frequently would, in fact, pretty much always would beat Spock. And this was another example on Strange New Worlds where they, just like they did in Tomorrow, they referenced Kirk's superior chess playing ability.
Mm-hmm. they did the thing in this episode where she's all watching the video of Hemmer. He's like, let's start with dialing down the gain on the subspace antenna or else you'll burn out the receiver. And then she's like, burn out the receiver. And that's, she has that eureka moment. Like, yeah, like that always, that's a common trope they use in various shows and movies where it's like something seemingly unrelated, but they pick out a little substring of that whole character.
Are you sure?
Array.
I mean, when I've employed that strategy, it's just because I wasn't really paying attention to what the person was telling me, so I just repeat the last thing I heard them say.
Right. Well, I think this was implied that it was somehow connected.
It was implied that it was somehow connected.
Connected.
Yeah, it was implied that it was somehow connected.
Yeah, I know what you're doing.
I love math.
You know what you're doing.
I love math.
So, So they did that thing.
I like when Spock was all like, Spock was all like, I love math, and Kirk was like, I do too.
I don't even remember that.
Oh, it was okay. This goes to that pullback scene where Uhura and Kirk are hanging out at the table. Sam comes over and they have the whole like hilarious thing with Sam Sam was fishing for compliments, right. Where Kirk was all, you know, Sam was like, I'm really proud of you for real. And Kirk is like, that's great. And then they do that whole like looking like doing goofy faces.
Yeah.
Because Sam was like, you're going to say you're proud of me for being on the Enterprise. Anyway. And they do all that. And then Spock, of course, shows up and complains about Sam, Kirk. Kirk says, hey, why don't you join us? Uhura's like, yeah. And it is, you know, of course, makes perfect sense that Uhura, the person who is good at communicating and getting people to communicate, is the one that would introduce these two to each other. They start chatting and Uhura says something about, I'm not entirely sure what she's referencing, but she says something about like the math of it all is still blows my mind or whatever. Mm. And then Spock is like, I like math.
I don't know.
And then Kirk says, I do too. And that's the last bit of the conversation you
connect.
Can hear. You can barely hear it. It's because it's under, you know, the jazz is playing and the camera's pulling back.
I didn't hear it with my old man ears.
Well, you can,
there was a ringing.
You can turn it all the way up.
There was a crew member that was with Laan and Pike, I believe, when they were looking for Ramon. There was a crew member that had a gun, but he didn't say anything. I think he was in about two scenes. I can't remember if he got shot or not, but I was thinking like they didn't pay him to say any lines because it was weird.
He shot the phaser a couple times.
Yeah, he was just standing there quite all awkwardly. Like, I think at one point Laan was like, come with me, and he just kind of like nodded all strangely and like, so
he was like, you better not fucking say anything.
Yeah, to pay you money. The whole Uhura has a textbook case of overwork and exhaustion. I mean, yeah, but like exhaustion is such a funny diagnosis. It's like it just means like they could be anything. They could just be really tired. They could be on having some kind of episode mentally. They could be like on some, like they could be on drugs.
What sort of drugs, Dan?
I don't know. They might like, you know, taking too many drugs and they got strung out and they need to like, you know,
strung out.
Reevaluate.
I ain't never been strung out on anything in my life except music.
So a classic
that's an Elvis quote.
So a classic textbook case of
you can look it up. Elvis talking about being strung out.
A classic textbook case of overwork and exhaustion. It seems a little.
The reason
bit
the clip is funny is because Elvis is obviously strung out when he's saying he's never been strung out in anything except music. Apologies, Dan.
So I was just saying that overwork and exhaustion is a sort of nebulous thing to
it is
prescribe someone or diagnose someone.
Brian.
Yeah, exactly.
Chief O'Brien, indeed. I think the last thing I was going to say was that this episode really solidified for me that they've settled into a sort of a Deep Space Nine style rhythm in terms of episodic series, episodic episodes.
Episodic rhythm series.
Episodic episodes.
Plimbo.
But with this.
Plimbo.
Bringing the characters along, you know, these character arcs that
Plimbo.
Go, and these storylines that are going along in the background.
Plimbo.
But that when they're, what? When those storylines are referenced in an episode.
New drivers available. GE Force game drivers now available for download.
When these storylines are incorporated, these season-long or series-long character arc-building storylines, they're incorporated into these episodes. They're done in bite-sized bits that are comprehensible,
bits.
Independent of the rest
of
the arc.
On Noonien Singh.
Extra bits.
In other words, just
fly me to the moon.
Dan is playing the part of Patrick tonight.
Fly me to Bannon's Nebula.
And
it's a special stellar nursery.
But I like that they're doing this. They're getting that. They're getting that good episodic series where you can pluck into the. You can hop into this episode independent of all the others. Enjoy this storyline and whatever character building is going on. You'll understand everything you need to know. It's not like some of the serialized ones where you'd be very confused if you jumped into episode six of any given episode of Discovery or Picard. It would be kind of confusing what was going on. Anyway, that was my concluding point.
My concluding point is everyone always does that thing with the light in one hand and the gun in the other trick, you know, when you hold the flashlight.
Didn't they start doing that like on the X-Files?
I was just going to say, that's the first time I remember seeing it as X-Files. Yeah. When I saw it, I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
If you have a rifle, then it would just have the light on the rifle.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking that made a lot of sense because I was like, well, yeah, you can light up where you're shooting, but I'm wondering how you can aim with that one arm.
I just
always
feel like my arms would get tired. Guns are heavy.
Guns
are minimum 6-7 pounds, and many of them are going to be more like 11-12 pounds.
And you wouldn't get much.
I don't know what that is in metric.
You wouldn't get much accuracy, I would think.
7 kilograms.
Those little guns.
Like
are
holding one-handed gun. I mean, maybe if you're in a small corridor, it would be okay. I don't know much about shooting handguns, so I don't know. But it seems like two hands is the
way
to go.
I would get tired, and I was like,
gunfight in the hallways.
Maybe I need to work out more because I really think that would be stressful. I would just like hold my gun. I'd be ready to go. You know, I'd be like, I'm paying attention. I'll raise my weapon if necessary. I don't know about this whole walking around with a flashlight and all this other business. Yeah. Anyway, you should get like one of them headlamps.
Headlamps.
But maybe a phaser isn't that heavy because it could be made of lighter material.
Maybe they have a special flashlight holding gun.
Yeah, I could buy that, but still. They do shoot light.
Maybe the flashlight's really heavy.
But they shoot it's light, like but they must be get that energy from somewhere.
They need a battery. So yeah.
Yeah. All right.
In Tomorrow, did they ever say like, I don't know where it or when it is? Did they ever do that thing? I don't know where or when it is? Did they ever do that in Tomorrow?
I don't think so. I have a feeling we would have pointed that out. Specifically, I have a feeling you would have pointed that out.
I would have.
And unless you did point that out in the episode that we discussed it, which you may have and I'm just not remembering, but unless you did that, I don't think it happened.
No.
It was a segue into this, which is not quite as interesting, but this is...
It's a good thing it's at the end of the episode.
This is
a good thing you saved it to the end of the fucking episode.
It's like the last skit in SNL.
Precisely.
They're not all winners.
Yes.
You're in bed by now. they did this. This is a sort of one of them cliched lines.
Someone or something.
You know, they do that. They hear that line like,
I didn't like
much.
That. And you know what else I will say that I feel bad for admitting
this. I don't
want
to end it on a downer because it was a good episode.
It was a great episode. But I as much as I loved everything about this episode, pretty much, except I did find it really weird when Uhura was the one who ordered the firing of the...
It was a little awkward.
Yeah, that, when she was like, fire torpedoes.
I didn't like that. I don't know. Something about that was weird.
Lon looked at the captain.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, it all worked. It was fine.
It was a little out of line.
I don't know. It felt like out of character for Uhura.
Yeah.
She was
exhausted, you know.
Had exhausted. 100%. But I think she'd been like, yo, we got to do this. And then he's like, okay, I trust you because you're not going to be bullshitting.
It was weird she said that. When he sat her down at the end, like, they were talking about her needing to being on medical leave, except at the very end, he was like, sit down, do some shit. Yeah. Okay, then you need to take a nap. Up until that point, he kept kicking her off the ship, but like now it's established that she's actually some serious shit going on. He's like, nope, I need you now. Suddenly, now go to bed.
Typical boss.
He's got to talk to an admiral.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's pissed about that. Yeah, that's some serious explaining to do.
Yeah. All right.
That's some serious explaining to do.
Yeah.
Serious explaining.
I think we did a good amount of explaining.
We did. Yeah. All right. So that has been the It's Got Star Trek podcast for this week.
It certainly has.
Don't forget, for our 200th episode, please head over to itsgotstartrek.com/record and send us in a message or send it in via email or your own MP3 recording, whatever you like. But definitely get those messages in. We thank all the folks. We've gotten so many messages folks. But we want to pack that episode full. It'll make our job a lot easier. You can do the work for us as the audience, sending in some cool, whatever you want to send it. And in the meantime, if you want to find us on social media, we're all over the place. All over the place, right in the middle of the social media wars. We are on Twitter, Blue Sky, it's Instagram, Threads, Mastodon, YouTube, Facebook, all that stuff. All those places you can find us at It's Got Star Trek.
Beezies.
You'll get it. Just type in Discount Star Trek. You'll find us wherever you need to find us.
We're also on
Malarkey.
We're on Malarkey, so just look at Malarkey. And we're on Malarkey.
I mean,
clearly.
It's funny. It would be funnier if Malarkey was a thing.
But like, that's what makes it like extra funny. Media. No, is that's it, what makes it extra
is
funny.
Is it, Dan?
Because you're like making
it
fun because, of
it. Is it like a double reversey funny?
Because Silicon Valley comes up with all sorts of crazy names for web right, businesses like Boop and Zap and Ding Dong and things like that.
Googly bits.
Would it be like Malar.key?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Dan's a little too excited about that. We're going to go register that domain name.
Yeah.
Yes, find us on social media. Communicate with us at feedback@discussstartrek.com or wherever you need to do it. Next week we are super excited for next week because next week is
is it the shit?
It's the shit. It's the crossover episode with Lower Decks, and we love Lower Decks. So episode 7 is called Those Old Scientists.
Oh shit!
I have been assiduous in avoiding watching scenes or previews and stuff of this particular episode.
There's been so much chatter about this.
I've seen a few screenshots, but I can't wait. I hope they pull this off because I think this has the chance of being a really great episode.
He's beside himself.
It's directed by Jonathan Frakes, so that's awesome. I believe it's directed by Jonathan Frakes. So anyway, that's what we're going to be discussing next week. Super looking forward to that. Until then, have a great week, and we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So that the map of that is still...
No, I know.
I know, but
I do too.
He does love it.